All right, well, why don't we do the roll call now, then? It's 9:01.
Okay. Ari?
Here.
Federi?
Here.
Hate?
Here.
Late?
Here.
Late? Okay.
Here. Sorry.
That's okay. Laraway?
Here. This is easier if you guys put your phones on mute until you're asked to talk.
Yeah.
Levitt?
Here.
Lineski?
Present.
Manko?
Here.
McAllister?
Here.
Rosa?
Here.
Scopo?
Here.
Kavanagh?
Here.
Terry?
Here.
Ben Warmer?
Here.
Broman?
Here.
Weinhofer?
Here.
All 16 supervisors are present, and I believe the county attorney is as well.
I am.
Thank you.
Okay. If we could do the pledge, I'm trying to stay as much as we can to the format, and then I'll ask Mike to do the invocation. So I'll start it. I pledge allegiance to the flag, United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all. Mike?
Yes. Dear Lord, we pray that you show your compassion and power by healing people of all ages from their physical, mental, and spiritual ailments. May they feel your power of healing through the care of our doctors and nurses. Take away the fear, anxiety, and feelings of isolation during this most trying of times, especially for those receiving treatment and or who may be under quarantine, all the while protecting their families and friends. Watch over and shield from harm all health care providers, emergency service workers, and all those who are essential to the continuation of our day-to-day needs. Bless each and every one of us as we continue to do our business, hopeful that with each decision we make, it will be the right decision. Amen.
Thank you, Mike. Very well said. All right, you know, this worked really well last time, and I explained at the beginning of the meeting last time that why we were doing it in this format, and you all know that, but I'm just going to repeat something about four or five lines that I jotted down, just so it's a matter of the record, because this is not a conventional format. This way it's in the minutes, and if you could put that in there, I'd appreciate it, Cheryl, and it's also on the recording. I've reviewed with Mike West the legality of how we were conducting the meeting under the state of emergency and the need to make, if we could put it on mute, would be very helpful. Under the state of emergency and the need to maintain social distancing, which would be impossible with a conventional format. This meeting is being recorded and will be released quickly on the county website, like the last one. The county newspapers of record have also been invited to sit in on the call, and hopefully they will share the details of the meeting. And, of course, there will also be minutes of the meeting. And just so maybe we cover as a reminder before we get into the report from the task force, the prior regular board meeting under this worked very well doing it this way. 10 days ago, it seems like yesterday. So just as a reminder, this is a large group for a proactive meeting where questions and comments will be encouraged. And as such, let's hold off on questions and comments until the members of the COVID-19 task force have finished briefing us. After they have finished, I will poll each member of the board for questions and comments, which worked really well last time, so we weren't stepping on one another. And everybody will have a chance until they don't have any more questions or comments. We can do this as long as you'd like. So, that being the case, I'm going to ask our superheroes of the COVID-19 task force to share with us as to what's going on in their particular area and how it's helping the county and our public safety. So I'll start with Dr. Amy, if she could share with us.
Sure. Good morning, everyone. So in the health department, as you know, we've been extremely busy. We currently have six positive cases. There's one additional case that we'll be releasing a press release on later. At some point, which we haven't determined, we will stop releasing press releases for each additional case as this becomes more routine. We discussed yesterday the idea of putting together some kind of a table that gets updated that people can check when they want to check it. We're also monitoring about probably between 40, maybe up to 45 people at the moment. That would be higher if there was more testing available in the area. As I'm sure everybody knows, the testing supplies have been in critically short supply here. Because of that, they've been reserved primarily for clearing healthcare workers or people who are very, very ill. So that's been the holdup for people getting testing. We have people that we know are symptomatic. We have people that we know are symptomatic and had direct exposure to a known confirmed COVID-19 case. And those people are not necessarily able to get tested right now. The bottom line is that there is more disease in the community than we know about, than we have recorded. It's appropriate to act accordingly. It's appropriate to maintain social distance, minimize your contact with others, make sure that you're washing your hands and using hand sanitizer when you do go out for necessary errands. Exercise caution. It remains true that most people are recovering at home without intervention, and that's a wonderful thing. However, if we look at what's going on in New York City, the situation there has gotten very serious very fast, as I'm sure most of you are aware. There were reports that the number of 911 calls, I believe it was Friday or Saturday, exceeded the calls that were made on 9/11. There are multiple additional hospital units being set up, which if you have been listening to the governor's State of the Union addresses, I'm sure you're also aware of already. I just this morning heard about a tent hospital being set up in Central Park. So the situation in New York City is not good. The number of deaths across the state crossed the 1,000 mark. I expect that a low estimate of the total number of deaths by the time we're done will probably be for New York in excess of 100,000. We're still on the upward trajectory for this disease. We're nowhere near the apex. We're nowhere near going into a recovery phase for this in New York City. In Schoharie, we are lagging behind the New York City curve, so that's something to keep in mind, that as we see what's happening in New York City, our disease trajectory is lagging behind New York City's. So even after their number of cases begins to come down, I would expect that ours would continue to go up for a period of time after that. I was glad to hear that the president has said that social distancing should remain in place until the end of April. I think that that's a very minimal estimate for what we're going to need to do. I think that it will last beyond the end of April, but I think it makes sense to reassess as we get closer to that point. The apex is anticipated to hit sometime around the middle of April. And obviously you don't start sending people back to work at the most, when you have the highest levels of disease. And again, that apex for middle of April would be really geared around New York City, so ours is likely to be somewhat after that. We've been in close contact with the schools. As you know, they've now closed until the middle of April. I would anticipate that that would continue through the end of April and almost certainly into May, but again, we'll reassess as we get closer to those dates and see what's going on. The situation with hospital, our local hospital has worked very hard and has increased capacity by 50% as asked by the governor, but they are looking to increase by 100%, so they're working on that at the moment. That said, we don't have critical care rooms. We don't have, we have very, very, very limited supply of ventilators, not close to what I anticipate that we need, so I'm hoping that there's at some point some movement on that. I don't think that, I think that when our peak is hitting, the hospitals in surrounding areas are also going to be full. I think there's going to be more people in need of hospitalization than there is capacity. So I think that the thought of sending people somewhere else may not be as reasonable as it usually is. So I know that they're working hard on those issues. I know that they're collecting resources to the best of their ability. There's one respiratory therapist on staff and two additional people who have training and are working to get their certification back up. So that's good news. I want to thank all of the businesses and people who are supporting the businesses. I think that there's been a lot of fantastic innovation that we've seen with businesses finding new ways to continue to serve the public. It is acceptable for a business to be open as long as there's only one employee running it, even if it's not a critical business. And I know a number of businesses have taken advantage of that, and I think that is a good thing, not a bad thing. You know, the concern is not having businesses open. The concern is having people spending time, lingering, interacting with each other. So if there's ways that businesses can stay open and help people by providing food or crafts or games that can, you know, help this time go better, more easily, I think that's a wonderful thing. I think that there's a number of churches that have gotten some very innovative online worship plans. I know that ours has, and it's wonderful to see the ways that people are coming together and finding ways to connect. So I guess that's all I can think of right now, and feel free to ask whatever questions you have, of course.
Well, thank you, Dr. Amy, and I'm sure we will have a lot of questions for you when we finish sure. with the rest of the task force. So we'll move along now to Mike Hartzell, whose team has been working extremely hard, and he's going to share with us what's going on in his particular area. Mike?
Good morning, all. First and foremost, we're working hard to keep our first responders safe, especially our EMTs and paramedics. We've kind of changed protocols and the way we do business a little bit, making sure that, you know, the word gets out there to every call now. We wear a mask and gloves and don't take the chance. You know, try to keep them safe so they can continue to do their job for your residents. We are getting lots of supplies in from Homeland Security. We've also had supplies donated from local dentist's office. BOCES collected up supplies from school and delivered them to us. So we do have N95 masks, gowns, and gloves and stuff like that, and still have tons of hand sanitizer if anyone needs anyone in your towns. Lastly, they did declare this a federal disaster, so that means Colleen had sent out the applicant briefings to everyone, so I think they're for our region, they're tomorrow. There's three different times, so if you get a chance, if you want to listen what's reimbursable and what's not and how to apply, she sent that out to each of you. And if you don't get a chance to do the applicant briefing, that's okay. If you have any questions, our office will gladly help you out with that on what's reimbursable and what's not reimbursable. I think that's all I have, pending your questions.
Thank you, Mike. I'm sure there will be some. Let's move over to Sheriff Stevens.
Good morning, everyone. It's good to hear your voices and know you're healthy.
Good morning.
So it's good hearing from you all. Law enforcement has been participating in a number of conference calls. There's many, many webinars on being held by Homeland Security relative to 911 protocol and how to keep people safe, how to keep our dispatchers healthy, as well as the Sheriff's Association, who has conference calls on the Civil Department. Also, they have them on corrections, as well as a road patrol, and they're important. It's a good way for us to share what's going on in each county and trying to resolve this terrible thing. I currently have three people out in corrections. They're under doctor's orders to stay home. I have two returning. The road patrols we had a couple of out, but they're all back. And communications, we currently have one that is on military duty. So my goal is to keep everyone healthy. We still have to go out and enforce the law. Primarily, what's been going on is a lot of orders of protection and domestic issues at home, I suspect, because of we're all coming off of cabin fever, and then we're being restricted to stay in our homes. So all is going well, and looking forward to your questions.
Thank you, Ron. I wanted to ask County Administrator Steve Wilson if he has anything he wanted to add with what he is doing. Do I take that as... Okay.
Pardon me. Good morning, everyone. I just learned how to operate the mute button on my phone. Forgive the delay, please. Kind of, on the financial front, it's kind of bad news, good news. The bad news is we are expecting fairly quickly declines in the occupancy tax and the sales tax going forward. I guess that's pretty obvious to everyone. We are also anticipating declines in state funding for our just sort of our regular state funding as the state government starts to cut back on its agencies. We are generally okay in terms of property tax revenues, since that was basically all set in earlier in the year, like around January or so. But so that's kind of the sort of bad financial news. On the good side, on Friday, there was a significant federal stimulus program there, and there we don't have all the details on that. One piece of it has to do with support to businesses. This is perhaps beyond the Small Business Administration information that's on the call tomorrow. We are planning to work with organizations like SEEK to see if we can facilitate getting support to businesses. There's going to be some money flowing through the state to our communities, and that will likely run through the regional economic development councils. We've already been working with our representative on the Mohawk Valley Council, that would be Sarah Goodrich, and just kind of getting ready for that. finally, there will be resources directly to local governments, and that will be kind of like a disaster relief, as it were, and we'll work that through OES. So that's basically the update on the financial side. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. And just before we go over to Q&A, I spoke to Leo, the Finance Committee Chairman, yesterday and asked him if there was anything he wanted to add. I guess rather than wait, this is a good segue for Leo if he wants to say anything about our financial situation.
Thank you, Bill. Just a question. I remember last week when we talked, we directed Steve and the department heads to, on a weekly basis, look at the finances. One of the things I think, and it may probably is a little early to do this, but I think we have to really consider as we go forward, is the concept of backfills, whether we can have backfills or not. And so I know it's not something we want to think about, but I think it's something we have to think about. And as we go forward here, that has to be something that we consider, whether we do have backfills or unless it's an emergency situation. So I just wanted to throw that out, and any comments or thoughts, I'd greatly appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, I am going to throw this open, like I said, to questions, answers, comments, and so forth, and we'll exhaust until nobody has anything else, and then I just have a couple of remarks. Last time, I took it in alphabetical order of town, starting at Blenheim and down to Wright. Now I'm going to reverse it. So, Alex, you're up. Town of Wright.
No questions at this time.
Okay. Harold from Summit.
No questions at this time.
Okay. Sandra Manco from Sharon.
Yeah, I just want to know how we're going to handle committees.
The committee chairman will be determining if there is any pressing business from the department heads that they oversee, and I would hope also in consultation with the members. But I greatly insist that we not do those in person, that we do it with this format. And I believe the department heads are being polled to see if they have anything that really needs to go in front of the committee for action.
Bill, this is Cheryl. I sent out an email to all the department heads. A few have already gotten back to me. I'm still waiting
Peggy
on the rest.
Has left.
Well, I guess somebody left. Does that answer your question, Sandy? Hello? I guess she has left.
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay. I guess. All right. Does that answer your question?
No, it doesn't. I wanted to know, are all the motions going to be done in a lump? Can we do it by email? Do we need to have a conference call?
I would suggest a conference call, even if it's a brief one. You'll have a record of it, and it'll also be recorded.
And how does that happen?
The chairman would work with Cheryl and or IT to set up a call-in number.
Well, if they're simple issues, can't they be done by email?
I don't think that's a bad alternative if there's simple issues.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Town of Seward, Erwin Rosa.
Well, first I'd like to start by saying thank you to everybody that's been working diligently in long hours. I know it's rough right now. But my question is more for Dr. Amy. When will we have enough tests available for workers to find out whether or not they have actually gotten or have contracted the virus so that the company can actually apply for any credits from the federal government? Because without that statement or significant notice, they don't get paid back to help offset the cost.
Sure. Well, I know that Abbott Labs has just announced that they have a rapid test, and that's actually a fantastic step forward. So I guess it'll depend. So the rapid test would be one that you get in a doctor's office. They have the patient swab themselves so that there's not an exposure to the medical staff, and then they're able to read it in the doctor's office in about 15 minutes. And so that would be a fantastic step forward in terms of being able to decide who does and who doesn't have COVID-19, which would be great for both reasons. For
Wes Laraway
has left.
That would be great for being able to help find the right people who need to be quarantined, and also for companies that need that information. I guess it'll depend on how quickly they can roll that out. I know that right now there's every effort being made to get more testing available.
Wes Laraway
It's just that the demand for testing is so extremely high right now that they can't keep up with production. So I'm hopeful that that will be alleviated with this new test, and that we'll be able to get some better answers.
Do you have a timeline at all? Has anyone given you a timeline for the county?
No. And this shortage is not a county shortage. It's a nationwide shortage, and probably actually a global shortage. So I don't really anticipate with the extreme demand and the extreme need for resources in New York City with the high population and the high number of cases and deaths right now, I think that the resources are going to continue going that direction over more rural places at the moment. So unfortunately, I don't have any timelines.
So at this point, if someone were to think they were sick and part of an essential business, would you just assume that they are and run that business under the terms that this person has infected or possibly infected the others within that area?
So there are some guidelines that they've put out for actually making a clinical diagnosis without testing. And so a physician is now able to go based on exposure circumstances and symptoms and tell someone that they have COVID-19 and that they need to quarantine themselves, or actually isolate if they believe they have COVID. So I would think that if that individual obtained something written from the doctor's office, that should be enough, because that is the official state guidelines at this point.
Great. And we're prepared. We have that here in the county at this point.
Yeah, that's statewide recommendation, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Amy.
Sure.
Thank you, Erlen. And we'll move along to the town of Schoharie. Mr. Tavener?
I don't think I have anything to add.
Okay. Thank you. Dick Lape in Richmondville?
Yes, good morning, Bill. Dr. Amy, as I called you last week, soon after this, a lady had called and had been directed to go to Saratoga County for testing, and that's what did occur, and the testing took place. So I assume that is the case still, that they're being directed out of county, anybody that might have possible exposure?
In some cases, but I don't think that they're testing all people who present. I don't think everybody who presents and who one might want to test for is being directed to go out of county. I think that some people are being directed to go home and isolate. I know that there have been some tests that have been done, but it's in some cases it has to do with making sure that healthcare workers are able to return to work without infecting patients. So that's obviously important to be able to have healthcare workers do their jobs without risking infecting patients with COVID-19. And then also, in some cases, you know, if you have somebody who's going to be in the hospital, and this I think has been, the ones that I've heard about have not been at Cobalskill Regional, but in some cases, we've had people who have been in the hospital and have been tested, even if they don't have as severe of symptoms and they're in for something else, they might get a test again because you don't want to infect healthcare workers. So my feeling right now from what I'm hearing is that a lot of the testing decisions are made based on whether that individual is likely to infect other people or cause an issue within the healthcare system, if that makes sense. You know, it's unfortunate, but that's kind of where we're at the moment.
Okay. So, and again, I think the what we keep hearing as far as the limits, you know, we keep going by two weeks. I think that's probably off. I mean, with all the data we have coming in, we have the best GI systems in the state and the nation, best data collection, the best statistical analysis. That's coming in. I worked with it at Oneonta State and UOP, and that's coming in all the time on a daily basis, even a minutely basis. So we know that bell curve, that curve that we see on TV all the time, that's not going to start going down the other way until it reaches that peak and until there's some sort of a medicine or something, that peak going down is going to be the same rate it is going up. So I did hear a good point last night on the national news that the June 1st they're looking at now, and I think that's way more realistic. I think the 2 weeks and the 2 weeks are unrealistic.
I agree. I definitely think that June 1st is a more realistic goal. I think with the schools closing for 2 weeks, they're really going by the governor's directive because they're concerned about funding. But they all understand, we've had the discussion, they all understand that this is not likely to be a two-week issue, but they're following the governor's directive because they are concerned about losing funding.
Yes, and I believe, I don't believe any of our students, high school or college, we'll be going back before the fall semester, just for the safety and well-being of our young people. And I think that's the best call.
I agree with that, and I have shared that with the school superintendents. I have shared that opinion.
Good. Thank you. And thank you, Bill, and thank you for having these calls. We appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome. You know, I'll of course keep contact with everybody, as you all know I have, but if we feel it's appropriate to do another one, by all means, we'll do that, because I think it's important to keep everybody up to speed. Though it's no substitute for calling when something is on your mind, and we'll try to answer the question. Okay, moving along. Town of Middleburg, Mr. Laraway.
No questions. Good job, everybody.
Thank you.
Peggy from the town of Jefferson.
I'm sorry, I have a question in reference to the committee meetings. I'm on my cell phone, and for some reason it dropped call when Cheryl was giving that information, and my town phones are out of service at this point.
All right, I'll give the, well, in case somebody wasn't sure, it's not a bad idea to repeat it. We would love to do business as much as we can. We understand that that's not always going to be possible, and one of the alternatives is to do a call similar as to this, and to have, you know, they're recorded. You'll have it a lot easier to make the meeting minutes and have a package together. But Cheryl has polled the department heads to see if they have any business that needs to be conducted or motions to be made. And Cheryl, you're going to share that with the committee chairman?
Yes, once I have all the information back from everybody, I will be emailing all the supervisors to let them know where all the departments stand.
Right, and then that'll be the decision of the chairperson whether they feel a meeting is necessary, or maybe there's just some documentation for the record. Sandy also suggested an alternative would be to do some things by way of email if you feel you can make that work. And I talked about this with Micah when we were figuring out if we could do this under the emergency orders. That's an alternative, too. But, again, the whole point here is to avoid the need to congregate, to get together.
Okay, thank you. That's the only question I have.
Okay, thank you. Alicia.
Yes, good morning. I don't have any questions, and again, I just appreciate everybody's good work. We're in uncharted territory here for both governments as well as private enterprise, and everybody needs to use their utmost patience and understanding, and that certainly is showing with our team. Thank you.
Well said, Alicia. Thank you. Bill from Fulton.
I do have a couple questions, Bill. I have one that bothers me, and I know you try to communicate, but when I get people, a constituent call up, and they got more information than the supervisors have been provided, I just don't understand how that can happen. And because maybe it's me, because I don't sit in front of the computer and follow all the different websites that's out there, but I would think that we should have if the cases was added, then we should have something. But if you look at the emails that have come out, we haven't had a super lot of emails from the county. We get a lot of them from the intergovernmental services and that. So I'm just wondering if we could be provided with a daily update. And also, as chairman of the public health, I think I should be informed as whatever comes down the pipe.
We are making every, and I'm not going to get defensive, of course, because I appreciate any.
Well, I don't want to.
No,
I
appreciate what you're saying, sincerely. But I thought we were trying to communicate as much as possible. But I will caution you, some of the things that you might get emails are, unless they're from a government agency, are wild rumors, and they're not true. We're all getting those kinds of inquiries. But if you feel that there needs to be additional communication, that's of value, and we need to pull somebody away to do a daily briefing, we'll have to consider that.
I just feel that the board should be appraised on a daily basis. That's my opinion.
Okay. We'll do our best to accommodate that.
I thank you for that. And my other few questions, I also commend everybody for the work they've done. If you want to finish through everything gets over with Dr. Amy and them, I do have a couple more questions on how we conduct business and how we can help people. So I'll let you go on to the other ones. Then if you'll come back, I'll ask them.
Okay. No problem. Earl, how are you today?
Doing real good, Bill. How are you doing?
Good.
Okay. I'd just like to make a couple comments. I mean, I've been there as chairman of the Board of Supervisors, and I'll tell you, it's not an easy job. Every time we have some kind of a disaster, whether it be snowstorms, flooding, and now in this case, coronavirus, it's almost like a new set of plans come along. And it's awful hard to anticipate every single thing that needs to be done at every single minute. And I want to commend Cheryl and the ladies in the office for keeping us all informed really well, at least they have for me. I want to thank you, Bill, because you called me personally, and I think you're doing a great job in handling this situation. Obviously, the department heads, because without Dr. Amy and Dan Crandall and the different people doing their jobs, and which, by the way, they could be putting themselves into compromising situations in doing this stuff. So we've got some really good department heads. They give us good information. I don't think you can take any situation as a perfect situation. And it's kind of like you're flying by the seat of your pants. So when something new comes up, if somebody's got an idea, contact Cheryl, contact Bill, tell them what you think we ought to be doing different, and I'm sure that they'll accommodate. So I want to thank everybody, too, but I just wanted to make the comment that when you're in that position, when you're in a state of emergency, when you've got a new thing coming down the pipe, you're flying by the seat of your pants. And I think, Bill, you've been doing pretty good. That's all I had to say.
Thank you so much, Earl. I greatly appreciate hearing that from you, particularly with all your experience. So thank you. Really mean that.
Well, everybody deserves it. So thank you all for what you do.
Thank you. Leo from Cobleskill.
No, I have no questions other than one minor one to Dr. Amy. I'm assuming for people who are not feeling well and they've probably gone to the doctor and so on, there really isn't any. We can't be tested probably because of the lack of equipment, but I'm assuming people should just stay home, drink a lot of fluids, have an aspirin, and just and do a lot of sleeping. Is that correct?
That is correct. Up until the time that you start to, if you were to obviously experience issues with shortness of breath and those kinds of things, then you should definitely be consulting with your doctor. But for the vast majority of people, what you want to do is convalesce at home just as if it were like a bad case of the flu. The one thing I would say is the more you can isolate yourself within your home, the better. The more you can use your, have separate bathrooms, have separate sleeping arrangements. We advise that the family drops food off at the door of the place of whatever room the person is convalescing in and picks it up later. Make sure that you're washing your hands and using hand sanitizer. The less you can infect the rest of your family, the better, because it's not clear, right? I mean, it's not a given that just because someone is younger that they won't have a serious case of this. And there are some indications that the larger the viral load that someone's exposed to, the more serious the case may be. That's not a given, but there are some indications that may be true. So if you can isolate yourself within your home as soon as you start feeling symptoms, or if you know that you have an exposure, try to kind of do some social distancing within the home. My family is doing that just as a precautionary basis right now, even though none of us has had a direct exposure and we've all been very, very careful just as a precautionary measure. So that would be my advice.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you, Leo. John Levitt in Carlisle.
Yes, this is more for Steve. Just out of curiosity, with all of our town offices being closed, have we considered extending the collection date on town and county taxes like they have on the federal and state income tax? Because I know I still have a number of people who haven't paid yet and usually do come into the office, and we have our offices shut right up.
This is Steve. I don't know that we've particularly thought about this at the COVID-19 task force. I do know just on the listserv for county administrators and executives across the state, a number of counties are doing that. So we probably might want to consider it. The thing is, it's going to depend on your cash flow. And I'm a little dark on the individual towns, but if you've got a fat fund balance or you've just got cash standing by relative to whatever your expenses are, maybe you should be able to do that. I'm sorry, that's kind of a wishy-washy response.
Yeah, is that based on a town, individual town, or is that something that the county would do county-wide? Town-wide, and town-wide, we're Carlisle, we're not too bad. But you know, but I do know that there are individuals out there. We're telling them to stay home. Plus, I don't want my town clerk to have to sit in there and deal with the public. So there are people, and especially if we go to that June 1st date, like Keith is mentioned, then I think it is something that we have to consider countywide.
Right. Can I add to that? The towns themselves,
sure,
are the when our collectors take in the taxes, the towns are the get theirs up front, and then the rest goes to the county. So it's really the county that hasn't been made whole yet. The towns have, or and the special districts. But so it would be a county decision whether we wanted to defer that. I mean, we wouldn't discourage somebody from mailing in something, but that's something maybe, Steve, we can talk about with Mary Ann and get back to the full board next time we talk, or an email. Right? We could do that, too. And
so yes,
we want to proceed that way.
Will do. I'll investigate that, take that for action.
Okay.
All right. That's all I've got, Bill. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, John. That was a good question. Town of Broome, Steve.
Nothing at this time, Bill. Thank you.
You're welcome. Last but never least, Don Airy from Blenheim.
Thanks, everybody, for all that you're doing. Bill, I know what you're up against. Thank you for what you're doing. This question is for basically, I think, Dr. Amy and to OES. I have a Gozer building project in the town of Blenheim, and Gozer has resisted shutting that project down, and they've tried all kinds of ways to consider it essential construction, essential services, et cetera, and I am not on board with that as the project owner. So I guess my question to OES and to Dr. Amy is this. I'm waiting. We've been waiting since Friday for direction from Gozer about that particular building project, the Blenheim Municipal Complex. What opinion would you guys render with regard to that project staying active at this point?
Well, I mean, the governor's made a direction that only essential business or only essential construction projects should continue, and he's left some leeway for people to determine what is essential. I don't know the specifics of this project, but it's my opinion that construction projects put people potentially in close proximity, and I don't think it's the wisest choice at this moment. But you know, Mike?
Yeah, I just was thinking, looking at what the governor had put out on what's essential, not essential, I just think it's going to be kind of hard to enforce. It would depend on how many employees are showing up to the work site, you know, what the proximity of them are. And then, like Amy said, they kind of leave them out in the governor's guidance so they can continue to keep working, you know. Even in the bottom, it says if you have limited number of employees, you can still be considered essential, so I don't know legally what we'd be able to do.
Our project in Middleburg will continue, but a lot of the big stuff is done in its individual finishing work and stuff, so our project in Middleburg is still going on.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that, Wes. My problem is this. I've been waiting 2 weeks, and excuse me if you can feel my frustration mounting. I've been waiting for 2 weeks for Gozer to make a decision on this and give the contractors direction. It is a hot issue. Gozer has promised that direction. They have failed to provide that direction. Based on what I'm hearing from Dr. Amy, from OES, as a project owner, I probably have little leeway in that regard. But thank you for your opinions. I'm going to make a call today on this because at least I want to keep our county as a subrecipient, and I want to keep the town of Blenheim in the clear on this legally going forward. And I'm finding little to no guidance, certainly not expeditious guidance, from the governor's Office of Storm Recovery, which is not unusual. I think everybody knows how I feel about them. But thank you. Thank you for clarification on that, and I could have anywhere from 10 to 15 to 12 workers up there this week potentially doing sheetrocking, and I am not for this. I don't believe that that construction should continue, even if the optics for Gozer are to finish by June 30th. Thank you for that input. I do have one other comment to make. This regards the Energy Committee. I hate to have a first meeting under these circumstances, but I have no choice. I want to be on the record and let everybody know that committee, this first meeting, will be held under an executive session type of arrangement, simply because I have no way of being certain that there are going to be any energy attorneys on this call or privy to the call, and we will be discussing negotiating strategies for energy developers as well as strategies going forward, perhaps with legal issues moving forward regarding the governor's initiative for energy siting and permitting. So just wanted to get that out front for everybody. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you, Don. I've gone through the list. I don't know if I want to do it or go through it again or just throw it open that we can ask if anybody else has any questions or comments. So I'll do that and see if I see there's a lot, then we'll go through the list. So, any
additional? Well, I ask for a second chance, Bill, if I may.
Go for it.
How are we handling anything in the county clerk's office? Because I've had questions asked and about property transfers and stuff like that. Do they take appointments or is there nothing there? And I guess that would probably be for Mr. Wilson a question.
Well, Mike West, I want to answer that, Phil. The county clerk is up and running. They do not allow any access to the public. Two ways, they are filing documents. They are keeping up with the filing of deeds, mortgages, and things like that. Either somebody will have to mail them to their office, or they could actually call, and they would meet them at the door, front door, take their papers, and then they would file them. When it comes to any court papers, they are not taking any type of court papers for filing because the chief judge has told them that they're not allowed to. Real estate is up and running.
And I was talking to Dan Crandall over the weekend, and he's probably going to put in a drop box out there for DMV to supplement the one that DSS had put out.
I guess I understand that question, but DMV is a kind of a tough situation for a lot of people. Don't understand every little thing that has to go in the drop box. So I guess that's a tough nut. I don't have an answer for that. And
if you're going to move on to something else, let me just address that part of the drop box, okay? The
yep.
drop box is more for the clerk. With the property transactions, the legal documents. As far as I was on a call yesterday and on Saturday where the same question came up, and the governor is emphatic when he says that the DMV offices are closed. The only transactions that can take place are by way of online.
How do I get my ticket?
And that was repeated twice because I guess some people didn't get it on the Saturday call, so they repeated it again yesterday.
Well, how does the motor vehicle shops get their inspection stickers and stuff?
Okay. The inspections, all inspections have been deferred for at least 30 days, and it probably will be more now that the timing has changed. So you will not get in trouble for an expired inspection sticker unless it's a year old, and maybe you will.
Well, I just asked because the motor vehicle shops are open, and if they can't get their stickers, they can't do them. But I guess you just answered that question.
Yeah, I actually heard that. Also heard it on the radio.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Anybody else?
Yes, Bill.
Okay.
This is Harold.
Hey, Harold.
Hey, On the information being put out, being there during a disaster, something like this, it's a moving target every day, and I think you're doing a great job and the other people involved. Sometimes you don't get information till the day of, and you can't get it out. It's a hard job. I think you guys are doing a great job.
Well, and effort. I appreciate the comments, but the real heroes are the COVID-19 task force, and I'll get into the other folks, too, in a moment.
Well, that's what I meant when I said everybody else is involved. Here's a touchy question. What's the county going to do about all the people that are moving into the county, coming up, moving in? I've seen other counties doing things. What are we going to do?
Okay, good question. I spent a lot of time on the phone that over the weekend on that. I did get one or two inquiries, and I did hear about places where they, I don't know what they were. They were not a local law, but they were directives that certain people coming into the county, that they would have to register. This is one place, register with the pub board, the public health, and that they would have to self-quarantine for 14 days. It's unenforceable. Yeah. And frankly, it we cannot issue those kinds of orders because the governor has directed anything to do with emergency orders directed during the COVID-19 crisis related to public health has to be approved by the state. They've taken that home rule right away from us, and I'm not going to get political. They just took it away from us, and so they will not pass that. The governor is on record, as you probably saw over the weekend, that he does not want to prohibit people from moving in and out of areas. And even though the federal government has strongly urged, and he's even made the comment that, you know, if you're in a metropolitan area, you should stay there and stay in place. But there's no enforcement involved here. And I had a conversation with Dr. Amy on this, and if you want to add to it when I'm finished, Dr. Amy, please do, that it really doesn't matter anymore. We've had such an influx of these folks coming in. I'm going to use my town as an example, but I've talked to a number of you, and you see the same thing. There's a lot, like in Conesville, 60% of the houses here are seasonal or weekends, and I'm seeing a whole lot of cars in driveways I don't see this time of the year. And yes, it's putting a strain on resources if they are affected. It's also, I put out, and so did the county, a mass mailing to all our residents, and not just our residents. Anybody who has a mailbox, we told them basically, we gave them the do's and the don'ts about how to cope with the COVID-19, but we also had a section there that talked to, if you come into the county expecting to get a greater level of resources than from where you left, that's not true. And we went into why that's the case, being rural county with limited hospital space and so forth. We also asked them that they stay close to their house and not to go out on shopping trips. If you haven't brought enough with you, make one trip, do it, and stay at your house. But the fact of the matter is we can't force them. Did you want to add anything, Dr. Amy?
Only that those cases that we've seen so far have not had a clear connection to people having that kind of motion. It's actually, you know, we've had some cases of people who live here who have gone down and visited people in the city maybe before the outbreak was as alarming as it is. We've had people with unknown origin of disease, but it hasn't been specific to people who have come up from the city. So I think it's tempting right now to look for someone to kind of blame, and I really would say that with the number of cases in Albany, with the number of people who travel back and forth between here and New York City for various reasons, you know, maybe a few weeks ago, I don't think that's really a fair. I'm not saying that they couldn't bring something with them. I'm just saying that that's not where we're seeing a clear connection for disease transfer at this particular moment.
Thank you, Dr. Harold, anything else?
Yeah, on my committee, I'll work with Leo and Cheryl, and probably it'll be a conference if we need one.
Sounds good.
Great.
And then also, you know, what's one good thing about this meeting, being able to be at home, I can sit here and watch the turkeys out here in the backfield.
We going to be able to go hunting May 1st?
I hope so. All right, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for all the hard work.
Thank you. Anybody else? All right. I just have a couple of comments, and I do appreciate you staying on. It was a good discussion, and there's a few to-dos that came out of it, which I and the team will follow up on. But I just want to say a couple of things, and we don't know. The stimulus package, I mean, I'm grateful for it. I mean, it flies against my philosophical thinking that we would do this, but we have to do this. It's the right thing for the country. It's the right thing for our businesses and our people. I don't know how many dollars I've heard. I think I heard $250 billion for local government. I don't know how that's going to be divided up and who's going to do the dividing and how it's going to get to us, and most importantly, when. So that's why I'm thankful that all tomorrow to give us some guidance. The bill itself is 1,200 pages. And I know there's people that are really good at that sort of thing, sorting through it. So that's yet to be seen. And as Leo said, that we're going to have to start really looking at our finances. I mean, that's not our number one focus. I'll be the first to say that. But it's important, because when it's all said and done, we're going to have to reckon with it. So it does, with the reduced revenues, increased expenses, and if we get made whole on those, it'll be a lot better. But that doesn't lead to a good forecast, and we have to step up. And local government, though, isn't the only place that is under that the stimulus package. And we have to be very mindful that our local economy is extremely dependent on small businesses, just to name a few, the farms, the restaurants, and the attractions, and tourism, to name a few, particularly tourism, which brings in outside dollars, which is what we greatly need. And these are the leading employers in our county, in addition to government, education, and health care. And we need to get our citizens back to work, working. And I'm very thankful of again, I'd like to see more specifics, but they're working through that, but to see more specifics and getting these people back to work very quickly. I know there's a federal small business loan program in addition to the stimulus that came earlier, and it's an interesting loan. If you keep, as I understand it, if you keep 90% of your workforce working, the loan is forgiven. It covers your expenses, which is really a good deal if you're a small business. And hopefully we'll have a better idea what's going on soon. I do want to say, you know, the county has a rock solid commitment to our businesses, especially those who bring in dollars into the county, which we really need. And I don't think anyone would disagree, though, that right now our number one focus, sharp focus, is the problems that are in front of us. And I trust everyone knows that that is our mission, to get this terrible pandemic to heal so we can move on with the business of the county and our businesses, because we need them. The last thing I want to say is that a great deal of thanks needs to go to our county employees. They've stepped up magnificently. They've really worked hard. There's a lot of hours being put in by those who are showing up. And I know there's a lot of concern in some places about social distancing and maintaining that. And, I mean, especially the cleaners and other people, even people who are self-disinfecting and cleaning up their work area. We have to be very thankful. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. And along with that comes the department heads. They've taken this public health crisis very seriously, and they share the same desire that the board has to protect our employees. And, you know, while we're thanking everybody else, which we should do, we owe them a great deal, we should thank our fellow supervisors. You've all been very active in your towns, and you've kept the lines of communication open. We talk with each other.
Alan Tavener
has left.
All right. Goodbye, Alan.
so we keep the lines of communication open. And what's interesting, somebody's working on something in their town that might be good for their town, maybe not good for another, but I see a fair amount of sharing going on as to how they handled, whether it be a closure, requests for volunteers, or some way to identify those vulnerable people in their town and see what they can do for them. Please keep that up, especially since this is going to go on for a while, and you all deserve a collective thank you. And of course, I already called them superheroes earlier, but a special thank to the task force. You guys have worked so hard to stay on top of this. You're working 7 days a week, and we need you to continue it. Keep the pedal to the metal, please, and I just don't know how else to say thank you. But I also want to say thank you to and certainly not least, some of the organizations and citizens of our community. They've stepped up big time. I'll give you a couple examples. SALT is organizing the sewing of masks, something we desperately need. There's volunteers that are coming out of the woodworks to offer help to pick up groceries and other necessities like prescriptions for our vulnerable populations. We've got businesses that are stores. I'll give you another example, Kymar Distillery. They shifted their production to make sanitizer to the county, no charge. And that's a big sacrifice for a small distillery like that. So there's a lot of other examples. So, and with the dedication of all these people, the workforce, the citizens, our churches, businesses, volunteers, I know they're all going to come through in a crisis. We saw that during the flood, and we're going to get back on track. So the last thing I just want to say is please continue to take this seriously. This is one nasty son of a gun, and to think that the end is in sight, it's not. We hope it'll be in sight, but we haven't seen the light at the end of the tunnel yet. Use all those euphemisms. Anyway, no one else has anything else to say, I'll...
Bill, I do. You set me to thinking, because sales tax revenue is going to be way down, and the county has a lot of expenditures. Where are we going to put the increased burden from the drop in sales tax? How are we going to rectify that? Are we going to bring that up and charge it to the property owners? Because that's property tax is where we get the biggest share of our revenue.
You're right. I mean, those are questions to be answered, and we have to be very delicate how we do that. I mean, it's counterproductive if we hit our property owners extremely hard to make it up. I mean, that flies in the face of maybe some of the things we want to do with economic development. So it is a balancing act, no question. And I will admit, I am very, very anxious to see what we're going to get and when we're going to get the money out of the stimulus package for our local governments, including our towns, of course. So, yeah, I mean, that's a question to be answered. I don't think anybody can look at it yet because we haven't sized it. And I don't know when we can, but we're going to have to work really hard on that. And there may be some things that I'll bring it up, that within the county, how we spend our money, that we may have to take a second look at because of the circumstances.
Well, that's why I wanted to put it on the radar to set us all thinking.
And oh, it's on the radar. I spent collectively at least an hour talking about it over the weekend.
And the other thing I wanted to mention, I know Don's not totally pleased with Gosar, and neither am I, but them projects are just like the West Fulton. If it comes, they deem it essential, because that's part of the shelter our services, if they follow through and bring it through, that makes it better for us to front emergency procedures if we get everything done. And a lot of it, I agree with Don, they don't make any sense, Gosar. But if we prolong it, then we're going to need more money to finish them. Thank you, Bill, for letting me speak.
No problem. That's what this is all about. So if I don't have anybody else who wants to ask anything or say anything, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
make that motion.
Who made that motion?
Don Airy.
Thank you, Don. Do we have a second?
Second.
Well, second.
All right, I'll leave it to Cheryl to figure out who that was.
Steve Weinhoffer.
Favor, say aye.
Left.
I'm going with Harold.
Aye. Okay. Thank you, everybody. We certainly will continue to talk. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Mike Hartzell and Ron Stevens.
Has left.
Erlen Rosa.